The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
You yesterday, and I've been doing this for years. Some people struggle if they're Christians and they're like, well, Christians in politics, I don't know that we should do that. Or even on Christian radio, I don't know that we should do that. Well, yes, you should. If you have a comprehensive biblical worldview, then that should overlay and impact every nook and cranny of your life. One of those would be politics. And so whether it's the call to love your neighbor, which would require you to vote, which is why I'm one of the few that's not afraid to say I actually think it's a sin not to vote. I think it's a violation of neighbor love, which is a violation of God love, which is clearly a sin on both counts. And then to be involved, to be informed. And so just so a little FYI out there, every 2 years, I put out my own personal list. All my own picks are on there. What's fun is I go to the voting booth every 2 years and I see people in the same location with my list. So that's my ode to my Chicago background. Adina Safta is here with us today running for Congress. AdinaForCongress.com in the 2nd District, which is currently controlled by North Carolina's version of
AOC.
AOC. We'll talk about Deborah Ross. But getting involved and being informed, so I'll put my list out. That's my ode to Chicago. So since I'm from Chicago, I take my vote seriously. And if I can vote multiple times, I do. And the way that I do that is by put out my own list, which people have asked for, which I appreciate and try to honor that every 2 years. And that'll happen again coming up. Okay, so before we get to the primary election, which, by the way, on that note, too, and Adina, you know this, the vast majority of people have nothing to do with the primary. They sit at home, they think nothing. They go, oh, I'll just deal with it when it all comes out in the wash. No, this is like going all the way back to middle school when you're picking teams and you care about who is on your team, do you not? And so if you're going to pick the person that's going to bat first, you want to have that decision. That's what we do in the primary season, okay? We're picking what we believe is going to be our best team to put on the field for the Super Bowl come November. That's the deal. So you cannot sit on the sidelines when it comes to a primary election that's coming up in May. So we're going to get to know Adina today and her story. I told you guys we're going to be talking to more and more people running for office, people that are serious about the nation and loving their neighbor and willing to make the sacrifice. Adina certainly is that and has an interesting family background as well. Adina, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. That was quick reaction of you when I sent you a message and you were like Johnny on the spot.
Like, let's do it.
You're ready to go.
Well, the number one thing, you know, when you're running against AOC is name recognition. And I tell people, you know, you can't really rely on the conservative media and, you know, journals, whatever, et cetera, to help get you name recognition before the primaries. Right. And so anytime that I can see somebody who has Christian values, is bold and willing to stand up for what's right, it literally takes me a second.
Oh,
to
you
say
should probably
yes.
leave now. That's so not
yeah.
me.
Well, thanks. Well, and can I just say one thing about the primary votes? I'm a millennial and I feel like I'm a product of what we've created. Like we're all at fault, right? Like we should look at ourselves and say, wow, I enabled this. Because at the end of the day, like we were so focused on who the president is, who the vice president is. But really, you know, if we were Republican, we're like, sure, I'll vote for this congressman or woman. And we really didn't know who we were voting for. As a millennial, I know myself, like I didn't pay as close attention until I realized that our U.S. Congress is destroying our nation and world.
That's
so
right.
I feel like we were all a product of that. And or at least millennials and like the, you know, younger generation where we in school, you weren't taught and for reasons. Right.
That's right.
On what to do, why vote and why pay attention to the different, you know, folks that you're voting for and not just vote because of your party.
Yeah. How convenient. It's almost like that was the plan.
Which of course plan?
It's been the plan for a while, which is why I do what I do. So we just met. So just so you know where I'm coming from, activism, I was telling you about that before you started the show. Radio started in 2007. For the last 10 years, I've been teaching high school homeschoolers locally, a 2-semester civics and constitution class, a 1-semester Christian ethics class. And this year we're getting ready to finish the first time I've taught a 2-semester U.S. history class. So I'm not one to sit on the sidelines and just kind of watch things happen, but I will do this on behalf of my generation to your generation. I'm sorry, and please forgive us, because a lot of this has happened on our watch. Mm-hmm. And I think we look too much to Washington, D.C. We don't pay a lot of attention. We kind of get on the opposite side of it or the backside of it, and we wait for somebody. Oh, Donald Trump's in office. Now everything's going to be mm-hmm. fine.
Right.
And you go back to your life and you stop paying attention. And then when he's not in office, you act like there's no chance for anything.
Right.
And Congress matters. You said it, Adina. It affects not only the state, like if you're representing the state of North Carolina. It doesn't only just affect North Carolina, it affects the United States of America. And in fact, take a look around, friends. It affects the world.
Yep.
It matters. All the yep. way from the top to the bottom.
We're the ones approving the federal funding. We're the ones that can stop it. And we're the ones letting it go to other nations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for you, as somebody that deals with finance, since you brought it up, then we're going to get into Adina's family background, because she actually wasn't born here. She was born in Romania. Her family grew up, and she grew up over there under a communist environment. So we're going to talk about that, because I told you when you came in, you have something that 99% of us don't have, which is perspective. Mm-hmm. And your perspective and your family's perspective is in dire. We're in dire need of that. Because most Americans just don't know what we have, which is why it's easy for a lot of Americans to say, oh, this isn't such a great country, because
right.
you don't have anything to compare it to.
Or this doesn't affect me.
Right. Exactly. But of course it does. But on the finance side, how do you, as a CFO type person, a finance person, you help other businesses as an entrepreneur when you see what's happening in this country? $30 trillion in debt. Biden just came. I said, oh, Biden. Mm.
I said, oh, Biden.
Oh, wasn't that good?
That
just
was natural.
Came out. $5.8 trillion budget. Everything's red. How do you react to that? As a financial person, and
yeah.
then as an American, and as a conservative.
Yeah, as a CFO, you always look at the bottom line. And in this case, it's like, I'm scared to look at the bottom line. It's just like, let's just look at who is running these budgets and approving these spending bills. There's no qualifications. Like in my position, I had 15 years behind me of financial experience before I started my own financial firm as a CFO for small business owners. And when you look at our U.S. Congress, who's approving budgets, approving spending bills, and like a like 3,000 pages of the Build mm-hmm. Back Better plan.
Yep.
You know, I printed out 500 pages and I was like, and it's like, unless you read the whole thing, you should not be allowed to approve it,
yep.
you know, decline it, anything. You just shouldn't be allowed to. And when you see the people that are doing these things and have no financial background in what they're
That's
doing,
right. it's a great point.
I can't even like describe it of anything more than just frightening.
Yeah.
Like it's frightening that our nation is being controlled by and you can't even blame them because they have no experience, right?
Right.
So it's like, here's the carrot, and they grab it, right? And it's like, wait, just like with the gas tax. Can I just use that as
sure.
an example? Because it's like, I'm the only one out of my, you know, my other two opponents and myself that gas tax should be suspended. Absolutely not. And
yeah, see, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute.
And you can appeal to people's emotions
sounds,
and say, yeah,
yeah,
I want that break. Give me that 30 cents
like,
a gallon. But hold that thought.
Yeah.
We're going to come back. We're talking to Adina Safta, Adina for Congress, running in the 2nd District, which is right here in Raleigh. Okay, it's Wake County, with Deborah Ross, who she called effectively our own AOC. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, spending some time today with Adina Safta, who is running for Congress. That's the 2nd Congressional District, which is right here in Wake County, currently occupied by Deborah Ross, who Adina said is what? She's like, what?
The AOC.
She's the AOC of North Carolina, which is not hyperbole. That's not an exaggeration. And so Adina stepping up to play to run, which we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about why you ran. In a minute, I want to talk about your family background because
yes.
you were actually born in Romania. But we were talking about gas taxes.
Yes.
And so when everybody hears, hey, a gas tax suspension, all of us, red and blue, doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, most people are going to go, that's a great idea.
Let's
because I'm
it.
Paying so much money at the pump. But for you as a finance person, you're like, hold on a second. That doesn't live in a vacuum. There's other factors.
Right.
So help us understand that, because I don't think most people think like this.
Yeah. So the gas tax is like 36 cents per gallon or something like that. So out of my, you know, we were three in the primaries. I was the only one that said, no, we should not suspend the gas tax. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you're like a horrible person. How can you say that? Like everyone's paying
people
so much.
People are hurting.
Well, if the time frame where they wanted to suspend it, like if you just look at it, like the average per year, etc., it would save the average driver $33. And that's great and wonderful, and we can all use it, right? Because we all are suffering.
8.5% inflation
in
yeah. March. That
it's
just
like,
came out.
And it's like, I feel like it's 10%. Like, it's just outrageous. But on the flip side, what like, as a CFO, I look at, okay, well, if it's helping on one end, like, it has to be hurting something, right? And so I actually reached out to one of my clients who's an engineer, my old clients, and the gas tax is the funding, the main source of funding for our NCDOT. So our NCDOT plans projects out 5 to 10 years on roads and construction, on maintenance of our roads and construction and bridges. And if we were to do that, the NCDOT would basically lose like $300 and somewhat million in funding for that. So if that happens, then we're crippling our roads and construction. Yep. You've got developments going up everywhere right now.
All
so think about
place.
That. And they're just now like making up, you know, the what they lost in 2020, which was like 8% of their funding.
Man.
So that would basically just put us back in like a crippled environment. And it's just a terrible idea. I would not want to save $33 so that I can sit in traffic and frustration and probably spend more on gas because I'm just sitting waiting.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make sense. So it's like, no, don't suspend the gas tax. Well, what's your solution, Adina? Open up the pipelines.
Yes.
Open up the ones we closed. Start there.
Start there. Yeah, we don't even have to talk about the land that's been permitted, but that doesn't mean you're going to use it right away, by the way. Plus, there's all the regulations on top of that. So when Jen Psaki and them are trying to lay that on you, just remember that's just a big distraction. But
yep.
But your point is, and most people is we tend to make decisions based on the here and the now. That's a political decision. It's based on I just want to try to curry favor with people, as opposed to doing what mature, responsible adults do. And we make decisions today whilst considering tomorrow and next week and next year and 5 years down the road. So, hey, if you can afford this today, it might not be a great investment tomorrow. And so politicians don't think like that. They just try to throw as much meat on the table. It's like going to a tapas restaurant and they're just trying to throw a different food at you to see what it's going to get you to vote for them.
Yep.
But they're not thinking about down the road, which is why my generation owed your generation an apology. Let's go back in time. Your family immigrated here from Romania.
Yes.
So what was the story behind that?
Yeah, so my mom played the lottery, the visa lottery, every 2 years in Europe, and finally won year 10. I was 10 years old. So I was born in Romania. The year that I was born in 89, it was the year of the revolution. So Romania was communist and the year of the revolution. And I tell people that because it's so important to know that when you live in a communist country, the worst is after. Because afterwards, you know, like you go from being under such strict, which is what's happening now, like government control and, you know, regime and all of that. And then afterwards, it's like, what do people do? Like communism ends, you know, and you're like, it's almost like you're lost,
yeah,
right?
It's a big
you have
train
to
wreck.
Find yourself again. And so the economy and everything is even worse after. And that's why I'm fighting so hard now, because it's like, if that happens here, like the world is just done because we're the leaders in the world. And so we won the visa lottery. You know, we went through all the right processes. We went to the embassy. I just funny joke, like I remember raising my right hand and I was like 10 years old, like short and chubby. And I was like just sitting there like this. And my mom's like, Adina, you could put your right hand down. I was like, no, mom, I need them to know that I'm going to be a good citizen. And I swear to this day, like that's why they gave us like they're like, OK, you guys can go to America. Like she clearly needs it. Like
what was your guys' perspective on America back then?
So as a little girl, I remember so vividly when we were leaving, I pictured that we would get here and that there would be trees with money on them.
Literally.
Yes. Like literally that was my vision because it was like the land of opportunity, the American dream. And that's like what you learn, you know? And so you don't learn that there's money on trees, but that was just what I envisioned that we would have when we got here. Well, when we got here, I mean, literally my parents, we had two suitcases. My sister and I was 10, she was 12.
Where'd
and my
you
parents.
Move to when you first got here? Was it
so
Queens?
We flew into New York and we like didn't speak English, so we couldn't even get out of the airport. We didn't know like what's an exit sign. But we ended up living in a one-bedroom apartment above a pizzeria with just a mattress. And we started our life over completely. So when, you know, growing up, like I always used to say, like we have so much at our fingertips and like literally we just have to do and want in America. Like there's no other nation where you can fail and succeed again, where you can leave everything behind, come here and start a life and succeed at it. Like, you know, my parents were like, they could have just stayed in Romania where they were comfortable, even though it was, you know, what it was. But coming here and risking everything because you know and you're confident that you literally you don't even have to speak English.
You just need a shot.
You just need to get here. Exactly. And so there's nothing that you're more proud of than when you actually come here legally and not, you know,
skip the line,
cross the border.
What did your parents do to get started here?
Yeah. So in Romania, my parents, like my mom had a fashion line, like she ended up, you know, was actually like underground. She was pretty cool. And my dad, you know, he was able to, like, work good jobs because both of my parents were go-getters and they were, you know, motivated and passionate about giving my sister and I a good life. And so when we came here, my dad basically started from, like, nothing. Like, he was, like, a construction worker, you know? Like, you just find the Romanian community in Queens, New York, and you're like, okay, like, start over. Like, just do whatever you can, right?
Yeah.
And my mom actually started, her first job was in banking. But after we lived in Queens for a short period, we moved to New Jersey, and the reason why is because my mom loves Bon Jovi. So, I mean, literally, that's why we
banked
New Jersey.
Here in Raleigh the other day?
I don't know, but if she knew that.
I saw my peers going out to see Bon Jovi. I'm like, now we're old because we go see a Bon Jovi concert.
That is the only reason we ended up in New Jersey. So that's where, you know, we grew up. But when we got to New Jersey, that's when my mom started working, and she started working in banking but didn't speak English. So it was like, wow, you just had to basically learn everything. Like, even the smell of food was different. Like, ham smelled different. Like, everything. You just have to literally start your life completely over.
Did you ever, once you got here, did you ever think, I'm not going to be able to make it? Or was the assumption, I'm in America now, all I have to do is work hard and try and be dedicated and I'll be fine?
I think I was more worried about, like, my dad winning stuffed animals at, like, those machines for me. No, like, you know, there's, like, I started doing just, like, regular, like, you know, random videos of, like, things that I remember, like, moments that I feel like were pivotal or important or things that I would see or learn. I just remember being scared when I went to school. Like, my whole thing, like, I've always been a perfectionist, so it was like, I don't speak English, I'm never gonna have friends, what am I gonna do? And, you know, that kind of related to the schools today. I tell people, like, I can imagine that little girl having to live and learn in this environment. I would fail.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I succeeded because it was a little more normal then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, things have changed a lot even in the scant years between those days and today. We're talking to Adina Safda. She's running for Congress. AdinaForCongress.com. F-O-R. Adina, A-D-I-N-A. AdinaForCongress.com. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Good job, Dwayne. And so deciding to step into the arena, small business owner, and you didn't have to do this, right?
No.
Your life's going okay. You got a small business. You're fighting through COVID. But what kind of got you down the road, Adina, where you're like, okay, I can't just sit over here and complain about it. I can't just vote right. I can't just pray right. I actually need to do something about it. How did you get to that?
Yeah, so it really started even before. So I was in corporate America for, it was like 15 years. And in a building on Fayetteville Street on the 10th floor. And in January of 2020,
oh boy,
I said, you know what? This is the perfect time. I'm starting my business right now.
Oh man.
And so I thought that I was following, like, what God's purpose was for me. Like, this was it. I was going to help small businesses with their financial
growing
needs. 2 months. Yeah. 2020 was supposed to be the best year for every business.
Incredible.
You ask any business, and they're like, this is going to be the best year ever. And I was like, oh, this is the best time to start this business.
Perfect.
This is my purpose. I'm going to get a, you know, a space downtown. Well, anyways, 2 months later, the wildest twist of events, COVID happened, right? And so here I was, like, no health insurance anymore. After 15 years, you don't have it right when a pandemic hits. Great.
Yep.
You know, no stability, like, just so much unknown. I'm a planner. I planned, like, my business for, like, at least, like, it was, like, 2 years almost. And it just so happened that was the perfect time. And so everything just kind of, like, completely was thrown in my face. And I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray on it, and I either have one of two. I run into the fire, and I stay with my clients, and I completely just throw my business plan out the door, and my only focus is to help them get through this, whatever this is that's coming. Or I can just close shop and go back to corporate America and have health insurance,
right,
have a safe, you know,
right,
position, and pay. Well, I'm a fighter, and I said, you know what? Absolutely not. I'm staying in this. I'm running into this fire, and I'm going to help my clients. And so I was very thankful that I did that. But in that process, I learned so much about our government. You know, it's like everyone that says, like, oh, well, I'm a small business, this doesn't affect me, politics doesn't affect me. And I'm like, owning a small business and going through everything like with my clients as a CFO is what taught me all I needed to know about politics to decide that I wanted to be in it. So in the last like 2 years or before I decided to run, I mean, when I saw, going back to how you made the point about they're just like making decisions like
Not thinking down the road,
like with the government funding, that was the first thing I thought about. Like when I saw how they were like treating our PPP loans, and I literally was like, I'm gonna picture this like a bunch of puppets sitting in a room and they're like, sure, we'll do it this way, and then they're like, wait, I have a question, what about this, and they're like, wait, change it, but like they released it every time. Reading PPP documents like I was like, this is insanity. And nobody knew. Like, you would call the bank didn't know. They would send you to the SBA. The SBA didn't know. They would send you to the CPA. Like, nobody knew. And because I had the experience that I did in the financial world, I could help my clients mitigate
because
through
these
issues.
Actual small businesses.
No way.
No way, because there's so much to figure out. They don't have a staff for that. It's like three people or five people.
No, exactly.
And
they don't
can't
have CFOs.
Get the money. Right.
Exactly. I stayed up, like, if there was something coming out, like, at midnight, I would stay up till midnight and I would submit all the applications. Wow. So all my clients got, you know, what they needed. They were on a strict, like, schedule of what they spent. I was in charge of that. And the Triangle Business Journal actually wrote an article on me because I was the only one doing that, and I'm like, that's scary. Like,
no kidding.
Why am I the only one doing this? I'm a small business that just started. But the whole point of it was, like, if we weren't in control of making sure that we knew, like, what we were spending, how we were spending it, and knowing that the government's going to come after it at the end of it if we don't do it right, then the small businesses were going out buying Maseratis and doing whatever because they're like, I don't know, free money.
Right,
because
all this cash came in, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so when I saw that, I said, okay, in order for me to even see the end of this, because we all know fraud is a big thing, all these like PPP fundings, SBA loans is public information. So I used to always say in banking, like fraud is like seven steps ahead of us, not because they're smarter, but because they're seven steps ahead of us. Yeah. So if we're smarter, we can catch it before it happens. And I feel like what we've seen so far, we've not seen the worst of it.
No.
All these businesses got all this money. The SBA EIDL just released that they're another 6 months delayed on their payments. So these people haven't made one penny of a payment if they didn't want to on this 30-year SBA EIDL loan. And so I know what's at the end of it. I said, like, okay, God, I'm going to pray on this again. Throw me into one more fire, but that's it. Like, please, no more fires. Like, just let me sell donuts for the rest of my life after that. And sure enough, it was like U.S. Congress, when I did my research and I saw that they are going to either send us into communism or save our nation, I was like, that's exactly the position that I want.
Yeah. When was that? When did you kind of have that epiphany?
So it was September of last year that I personally decided, but I didn't actually like announce it and go until December.
Well, plus everything was such a mess with redistricting and gerrymandering.
Wait, what's
stuff.
Redistricting?
Yeah, no kidding.
Like,
just throw the dice. Welcome to Vegas, North Carolina style. You just we don't know what the district's going to be.
Where we suit till blue.
So it was. You've mentioned prayer many times. So tell me a bit about your faith, because I want to talk about the race and what the main issues are. But tell me a little bit about your background there.
Yeah, so faith has been a big thing for me since I was a little girl. Like, even when I was, you know, in Romania, I remember, like, begging my mom to take me to my grandma's house in the countryside, where we would literally walk for, like, 30 minutes to go to church, and I would just get on my knees and pray. Like, I've always been very close to God. I feel like my faith is what's got me through this whole thing. But my faith in God and, like, his plan is also what's kept me in it. Because there's a lot of times when you're like, you know, this is wild. What is even happening? And, you know, it would be very easy to give up if I didn't turn to God, like, for his help. And I talked to him a whole lot.
Yeah.
I asked him, like, please tell me, like, what is going on with, like, the sanity of humanity? But I've always been very close to God, not just when the pandemic started, but my whole entire life.
Yeah,
like, I've, you know, I feel like when you're like a true, true Christian, you do go through a lot of like ups and downs, right?
Sure.
But I feel like had I not gone through those ups and downs, I wouldn't be the strong person that I am today.
Oh, yeah.
If to God, take on Goliath.
Yeah. If God were a helicopter parent or a lawnmower parent.
Yeah.
And this goes to the problem of evil, which I don't have time to talk about. But if there weren't all these trials and tribulations, if there weren't all these difficult periods in our lives, first of all, nobody would have an interest in God. We wouldn't even be appreciative of that. And you would never grow. You'd go to the gym 5 days a week and work with a 3-pound weight, which means you're never going to get anywhere.
Exactly.
So he knows that you have to go through that in order to grow. We know that about if you become a parent. We know that as parents that sometimes we just have to let our kids fail because that's how they grow. And we allow them to fail because we love them.
Yep. And to the kids' point, you know, I wanted four kids my whole life, you know, and I'm 33 now. And so for the last few years, I was like, you know, talking to God, like, you know, what's going on? Like, there's a reason why I don't have kids, but like, just tell me now. Like, let me know what is up. Cause I feel like my whole life, I was like, always like so strict and like good with the things I did so that I would be a perfect mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And like now I know exactly why I don't have kids. Like my job right now is to go and fight without self-desire, self-interest mm-hmm. for the parents that literally are like emotionally drained and just like have basically like gone up in front of the school board and have accomplished nothing.
Well, on that subject,
because the school board doesn't care.
You brought up my friend Chad Slotta, who's also running. He's also on my board, who's been showing up at school board meetings because his kids are in the school system. So let's just start there in terms of issues. Well, what's your take on what's happening in the schools? We talked about this a little bit before. I did a good chunk of the show yesterday mm-hmm. on things coming out in New Jersey and what's going on with teachers. It's just so disgusting on so many different levels. But what's your take on public schools?
And I will say about Chad, I think it was the first meeting that I ever went to the school board meeting because I said, I just got to like understand what's going on in here. Like I see it from the outside, but I need to see it from the inside. And the first interaction I had with Chad or like saw him, he was reading one of the CRT books and I was like, good heavens. Like I can't even listen to this, you know?
Shocking.
And I love that he didn't like say, I'm running for U.S. Congress. He literally was there as a parent.
That's
so
right.
Quick plug for that. I, you know, appreciate that a lot because it's about the kids. It's not about our positions and what we're running for.
Yeah, when we say it's about the kids, we actually mean it.
Yeah, exactly. We don't go like, I'm running for U.S. Congress and here's my platform. No, like that's not why I'm here. But I've spoken at two of them and I read those board members the Constitution. I tell them about ESSER funds and I tell them that Wake County sold our children and their education for $333 million. And that, like the last funding of it was, I think, $214 million. So why was the last funding the biggest funding? And why do they have until 2024 to use it? And why is all this other funding coming in? And so, again, when I saw what was happening in the school system, I said, I'm a CFO. I want the bottom line. And I feel like you need people like me that can look at what's happening and not get emotionally like, you know, attached or involved. It's like, let me see the money. Show me the money, because the money and your power is what's driving this. And it is. It's the ESSER funds and it's all the federal funding. The federal funding, it takes U.S. Congress to stop it. There's no business in the federal funding coming down to the local schools. Like, that's why this is happening. And we need to stop it. But we need people in U.S. Congress with a backbone and that can be bought in order to stop federal funding from coming down to the state level, because we have House majority and they can't do anything about it because the money's here.
And that's how they control the whole system.
So exactly.
They go, well, God, our schools are run locally.
Mm.
Yeah, but they're funded federally.
Exactly.
So much of that money comes down from D.C. And I'll tell this with my students in class and say, the scenario, and I'll say this when we come back. The scenario is your family goes under, the family business goes under. You find out that I'm independently wealthy, which I'm not. And so I'm going to bail you guys out. I'm going to write you a check for $500,000. Then let's talk about afterwards how our relationship's going to change, because I'm bailing you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you think there's a chance that you might be under some undue influence because you're using my money?
Oh.
Welcome to the education system. We'll be right back.
Oh, angels,
one of your words.
From above, you know you make my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Spending the hour today with Adina Safta. She's running for Congress right here in the Wake County area, the 2nd Congressional District, which is currently occupied by Deborah Ross, who Adina quite accurately is referring to as AOC. She's our AOC and NC. Okay, that's what the deal is. That's why you have to run against that.
It's a good hashtag.
Yes, indeed it is. Adina4Congress.com. Adina, A-D-I-N-A, 4, F-O-R. Adina4Congress.com. Looking at the website, save our economy and address federal funding issues, which as a CFO, you're thinking through issues instead of just telling us what we want to hear. Protect our freedom and constitutional rights. You actually, without knowing that I teach the Constitution, you handed me a copy of the Constitution, which
and
I appreciated. And a shirt. Defend our children and public education. So in terms of being out there and speaking to voters and at events and stuff, what are you finding here locally, Adina, are the hottest issues? And how do you speak into that?
Yeah, I think education is a big issue. And I think education is something that it doesn't really matter what party you are. If you're a parent and you love your children, it's affecting you.
Yeah.
And I think that where the government didn't know when, you know, like the devil doesn't know when to slow down
was
the kids. They went after the kids. They didn't stop. And that was a big turning point for just all communities, you know, and, you know, in District 2. And just doing what's right. You know, a lot of people, like, you look at, I mean, really right now, like we're being suppressed and oppressed. and our freedom of speech just doesn't, you know, it exists if it's what you, if you're saying what they want, right? Yeah. And I think that if you mess with people's freedom of speech, that also, especially, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I had an event this past Saturday, and one of my speakers, you know, she was a Democrat, and her and I met at church. She sat in front of me. I didn't know what party she was. She didn't know what party I was. We both loved God, and we were there, and we were singing. And like, sometimes I cry a little bit because I'm like, God, what is going on outside these doors? Like, and so after the event, we talked and we connected, and like, you know, she ended up, long story short, being a motivational speaker. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want someone to talk about hope and faith. I feel like hope is the last thing we lose. We can't lose it. And faith, we need it so that we let this fear get out of our systems. Yeah. And after we spoke for like an hour, like over the phone at night, she goes, you know, I'm actually a registered Democrat, but I stand with you 100% because I believe in freedom of speech. I believe in what you stand for, and I support you 100%. And I love my kids and education. Yeah. Those were literally the things that were important to her. Wow. So it's like, at the end of the day, if we're Christians and we love God, none of this other distraction, like none of it matters.
Well, those things all become kind of a common language.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go back in history, those are kind of the common principles that the nation was founded on. And that's the language that we have to get back to. It's kind of like the Tower of Babel. We can't understand each other. Both sides don't communicate. Not that I'm not talking about compromising. I'm talking about communication. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have any common language, we don't have a common Judeo-Christian ethic anymore.
No.
And we don't even have a common language in terms of foundational principles, freedom, equality. I say equality, and that's going to trigger some people. and opportunity. And I'm really encouraged that that's occurred between you two. Because it's based on some basic principles that you can agree on.
And that we both stand strong on.
Which is great.
Yeah. So I think that if you put those in front, and if we lead with faith and we like just don't allow the distractions to get in the way, there's nothing the devil dislikes more than when he sees his plan shattered.
Yes, that's right.
And that's his plan shattered. I mean, like, we literally stand strong together. Yeah. And it's like, we the
people.
He
wants disunity. He did it right in the garden.
We don't need to hate each other. We don't need to, you know, like, bash each other for our political parties. Like, I'll listen to you. You listen to me. Like, America was built not on communism, not one party. Like, we were built on having a Democratic Party, a Republican Party. It just so happened the Democratic Party is the one they chose first.
Right. That's exactly right. So, okay. So education, what else are some hot button issues for you?
Education. So the way that I look at, like, my run for office is the bottom line of our education and our economy are the two that we need to save. If we don't have people going in to save those two, we can't really fight for our freedom.
Yeah.
And when I think about like those two, saving the bottom line would ultimately save our freedom, because our freedom is only going to be taken away by our economy being destroyed across board. Like the education economy, our children basically being indoctrinated and taught CRT versus their own rights, Constitution restoration training. And our freedom being taken. So for me, I'm a big constitution pusher. I always have pocket constitutions in my bag. And I tell people, look, we all know the Constitution exists, but do we even know our rights? Like, how do we fight for our rights when we don't know our rights?
Well, if you don't know them, you don't have any.
Yeah. So that's a big thing for me is like, everybody is raising their hand and saying freedom. And it's like, wait a minute. Do you know the First Amendment?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what it is, you know? And so I'm very big on, like, my event, everybody got a pocket constitution. I want people to educate themselves and not just listen to, like, social media. And look, I'm a millennial. I get it. I've got Instagram, but I'm actually not really a millennial. Like, I don't understand TikTok and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, we're human, right? And we want what's popular, whatever. But the moment you could just, like, for a second step away and say, look, I'm going to read the Constitution today.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read what's on TikTok.
Right.
Then slowly but surely, we're going to learn, like, hey, we have the power. We the people, then the government. We the people, then the elites. And that is, like, my big thing. And I've always stood very strong on my, like, beliefs. And I never, like, I just released, I don't know if you saw it on my Facebook, my pledge to the people. It's like, no matter who turns against me, no matter, like, how many times I fail, as long as I stand up for what's right, like Sophie Scholl said, when she was going after the Nazis, stand up for what you believe in, even if that means you're standing alone. Because at the end of the day, if you have God with you, like, you've got all the force you need to win. And if you're doing the right thing, you are going to win. So that's my big, you know.
How difficult is it to run in a primary when you're running against two other people that are also in the Republican Party?
I don't really call them Republican, but if they were. I'm kidding. So one of my opponents, you know, I didn't expect to have a primary. I'll say that. I did not expect it. It was like I was going down the road. Everything was fine.
Well, we've kind of sold District 2 down the river.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And handed it over to the Democrat Party.
I was like, it's me and AOC. Let's go.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, when all this redistricting, like blue jazz happened, I was like, whoa, like two other people. Neither one of them live in this county, by the way. Like, they do not live in Wake County. One lives in Harnett County. One lives in Chatham County. So that was already like, okay, what kind of a public servant can you actually possibly be in a community you don't
serve?
Run
and serve, but serve in your community.
Right, exactly. So having a primary, like for me right now, is like the appetizer to the main meal at this point, is what I look at it as. I think Max is a nice guy. Like, I think he's genuine. He loves freedom. I have nothing negative to say about him except for that he doesn't live in this county and doesn't have financial experience. And my other opponent, however, Christine, I've got a lot to say about her, but there's a few debates planned.
Yeah, and that's good.
For me, like, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. If I see that you are not doing what you're supposed to, I will destroy you.
Well, that's just a letter. So you got to get in and have the conversation. That's why debates are so important. And
do you know how long it took me to get a debate scheduled?
Yeah, anybody that's not willing to do that, that tells you everything you need to know.
If they send their surrogate campaign managers.
Right. No, forget it. You got to be willing to stand up and have the conversation. I mean, let's be like, oh my gosh, how do you do live radio or take phone calls or let callers in?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you learn how to have a dialogue.
And exactly.
You have to be able to think. You have to be able to think on your feet. You have to be articulate. And then you make your point. And Rush Limbaugh, God bless him, his rule was anytime a liberal calls in, you don't interrupt him. You just let him talk.
Let him destroy themselves.
Because everybody's going to figure out they'll just destroy themselves.
Like,
and
he goes,
okay, thanks for calling.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep.
And so how can people, how should people approach a primary like this one in Wake County? We're talking about North Carolina Congressional District 2.
Yeah, it's very important. And I tell people, we need to make sure, well, by now, hopefully you're registered properly, right? And you can show up to vote. But it doesn't matter, like, how you feel about 2020, how you feel about election. Like, you need to show up and vote. But more so, like, I'm seeing it on social media. Like, it's very easy to sell yourself as a good person, as a Christian person, actually, as a, you know, whatever. But, like, research our history. Like, Google us. If we have nothing beyond our, like, if there's nothing on us, like, just living a normal life, then maybe, like, be a little skeptical and dig deeper. Run a background check on us. Like, it's easy to do. I told people, I was like, I'll wear a lie detector test when we debate. I don't care. The people are fed up. Enough is enough.
Oh, man, absolutely.
And I'm fed up. So I think people need to literally go to that level. Do not check anyone's name off because you see a nice commercial. Because I've got many nice commercials.
Sure.
But how do you know I'm legit? Do your research and make sure that everything I say you can validate me with. And when I get elected to U.S. Congress, accountability will be like for every, if you were there in office, if you're in office now, we need to hold them accountable. Because if I say that I'm going to do what I'm going to do, then I should be held accountable that I'm going to do what I'm going to
do. Yeah, well, yeah. When you're in, and if you don't live up to that, you'll rue the day that you met me.
Because
I'll be like, I know Adina. She was on the show.
Exactly.
She said this. She said that. She has the experience, but she's not holding up her end of the bargain.
Yep.
Yeah, we
and
push back on that.
Big thing, too, is like election integrity. We're very focused on it. We need candidate integrity as well.
Amen. All right. So District 2 here in Wake County, we talked
vote.
About this briefly. And most people are just like, write it off. It's blue, but it's this is November of 2022.
And this
and
is the most important
election
in the history of our nation.
But I would say Deborah Ross, because of the train wreck that is the Democrat Party and the Biden presidency and Congress.
She was
endorsed
vulnerable. By Obama.
She's vulnerable, isn't she?
And she's so easy. She will not debate me. I guarantee it, because I will destroy her. But more so than that, everything she stands for is absolutely has nothing. There's no substance to it. And the things like I look at her videos now and I'm like, I just laugh. I'm like, bless your heart. Like, you're trying really hard. Like, look, I'm in Wake County. And then I'm like, you know, taking 10.7 million every other whatever and doing nothing good with it.
Yeah.
So it's like she's going to lose. Like there's no, like she is my target. She's going to be destroyed. But I need to get through these primaries. So I need voters to show up. I need people to tell me, you know, deliver yard signs, volunteer grassroots. Like, we're going to win, but we've got to do it together.
Yeah, you got to do it together and get past May and then put all the efforts into Deborah Ross. I believe she is ripe to fall because the whole Democrat Party is ripe to fall in the context that we're in. So take advantage of it. You have to take advantage of it. Adina for Congress. adinafor.com. A-D-I-N-A-F-O-R. Adinaforcongress.
And nominate someone in May that can beat Deborah Ross.
Yes. Yeah, we don't need any more wallflowers. We don't need any more soft people. We need fighters and people that know what they're talking about, which is obviously you. So, Adina, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. You're very welcome. I'll be back again tomorrow. There's so much to talk about and so little time. But God willing, I'll talk to you again then. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.